Most people have settled in now. So it's the opportunity now, as every Friday evening, to give what we call a Dhamma talk, to take some situation or problems in life and have a view of it from a Buddhist perspective, and thereby to find ways of dealing with these problems and overcoming some of the hurdles to living a peaceful, happy life. And of course, having taught, sat here for the last 32 years, sometimes giving talks, actually 28 or 29 years in this seat over here, sometimes it's always difficult to find another little topic to actually to talk about. And I do tend to repeat myself, because you can't do anything other than that when you realize there's over 1,000 at least talks on the internet, and 1,000 times you can't give 1,000 different talks. But today's talk is topical, because I'm sure you read about the slaughter of 50 people in Orlando in the gay nightclub, and the killing of a politician in UK. We call those hate crimes. And I wanted to talk this evening about hatred and where it comes from and how it can be overcome or got past, transcended. And actually what it is, because each one of us from time to time have hate in our hearts. But I want to start with what it feels like to be hated. And I'm sure each one of you have had experiences of someone really hating you, and actually how you experience that. And it comes to my mind, the last time I experienced this, surprise, surprise, was when I was traveling, because I travel a lot. I've only just come back from teaching in Thailand and a night in Singapore. And I was traveling, of all places, to Sydney, and in the lounge of Sydney Airport, because I travel a lot, I got frequent flyer cards, so I get into the lounge. I always thought that's a place you can relax. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Even recently, on the way back from Singapore, somebody recognized me in the lounge. Are you Ajahn Brahm? Yes. I can't lie. I wish I could. And I would say, no, not me. And I get more peace and quiet. I said yes, and so they were from Indonesia, they recognized me, so I had to talk to them. I was trying to have some breakfast. But anyway, so that's my life. And even in the local lounge in Perth Airport, they know me so well there. Last time I was there, I had to do some marriage counseling for the person in charge of the lounge. It was very nice afterwards, you know, took a photo with me in the lounge and gave me an extra cup of tea or whatever. But still, I like to sort of relax when I go to these places. But I was in the lounge at Sydney Airport, quietly having a cup of tea, minding my own business, when this lady came up to me and said, are you a monk? Are you from Thailand? And I said, well, I just said yes. I'm not really from Thailand, but that's where I got my training the first 9 years. And then she exploded at me. You took $10,000 from my husband and you messed up his mind. I said, what? I never did anything. Honestly, I'm innocent. But she was, no way could I convince her. She had hatred. I'm not quite sure what had happened. Somehow or other, that her husband had found some, probably, I think I'll probably know the group, because they take a lot of money out from people, and it's not really Buddhism, you know, trying to buy your way to enlightenment. And it's a very easy thing to market, but it's very, very wrong, very immoral. Probably then, but I'm not sure, because there's no way I could ask anything, because she was haranguing me in the lounge. Great entertainment for everybody, because they could all stop looking at their tablets and their newspapers and have a look. This is really interesting. Because that, we always like to see things like that happen. But, you know, I just said, oh, I don't know, sorry. And eventually she left me alone. But no, she's glaring at me. But sometimes you wonder, just, obviously it was totally innocent. I don't know what happened. I didn't do anything. I don't mess around with, well, actually I do mess around with people's minds. But in a really good way. I've been messing around with some of your minds for years. But, you know, in a good way, peaceful way. And I don't take any money off anybody. So, I'm not quite sure why, but you were a victim of hatred when no way you did deserve it at all. How does that feel when someone hates you? It's very, number one, people get humiliated. But I refuse to get humiliated. What are my sayings? And I practice this. I never allow anybody to control my happiness. I take ownership of my happiness. And I'm not going to let anybody else upset me, no matter what you do, no matter what you try to do, no matter what you say, my happiness is my concern. And I'm not going to let anybody else, because of their stupid speech, even if they're right and I deserve to be criticized, I'm not going to let you take my happiness away. I'm going to sort of keep that as my area, my power. A lot of times, you know, that when people do say something to you or do misbehave, why do you allow them to take your happiness away? It's weird sometimes, because so often people come up to me and they tell me what people did to them, they cheated them, abused them, that they was accused of things they didn't do, or somebody really let them down, or they steal from you. Why do you allow them to also steal your happiness as well? As I mentioned some time ago, the last time, well, how long ago was that, when we had somebody stole some stuff from our workshop? And I told people, oh, this is in Bodhinyana Monastery, and I tell people afterwards, they can steal, you know, the generator, they can steal the chainsaw, but never let them steal your happiness. Why do people allow them to steal the happiness as well as the things? Yeah, they can criticize you, but they did the wrong thing. It's their bad speech. I always remember the law of karma. I've done nothing. I'm just sitting here having a cup of tea quietly. I never talked to you. I don't know who your husband is. I've never seen you before in my life. So, yeah, you can shout at me, you can accuse me of stuff, but I'm not going to allow you ever to steal my happiness. So once you finished, I went back to my cup of tea, and I think, well, I was reading something or other. So, not allow anybody to interfere with your happiness. But you know what it's like when you are the victim of hatred? So many times, why me? I haven't done anything. Now, once you know what it feels like to be blamed, and you know, you've never done anything, how many times have you got angry and hated others? And it's exactly the same. You've got it wrong. They never did anything. And anyway, why are you hating the person? Because, okay, you may hate the act, but even that is a bit sort of dubious. But for number one, never hate the person. At the very least, hate the act. And this comes from a teaching which is a very powerful teaching by the Buddha. For those of you who are out and out Buddhists who read the scriptures, it's in the Arana Vibhanga Sutra, who said, this is the teaching on non-conflict. So you don't create conflict in the world, which is the source of hatred. So if you are going to criticize anybody, you don't criticize them, you criticize what they did or what they spoke. They never demean a person. Demean the act sometimes, but not the person. The person is always much bigger than one or two words or one or two stupid acts. I've done stupid acts in the past. I've said stupid things which I regretted afterwards. And you know, usually jokes which go wrong. Which is a nice segue in today's joke. Today's joke, folks, a little three-year-old boy went to see this pregnant woman. This is thanks to Rodney, he's not here. But anyway, anyone wants to complain, it's Rodney's joke. A three-year-old boy went to see this pregnant woman, and he said to this woman, my mummy said you got a baby in your tummy. He said, yeah, that's right. And he said, was he a good baby or a bad baby? Well, it was good. Then why did you eat him? That's the logic of a three-year-old. He's got a baby in his tummy, okay. So anyway, I might get into trouble for that, but please don't hate me, it's just hate the jokes. But the key story which I heard when I was a student, which I always recall, which is focusing on this, it's in one of my books, it's the story of the two children in a supermarket checkout, parallel aisles, and one little kid dropped a jar of honey. And almost the same time, the other kid dropped a carton of milk. The honey crashed onto the floor, and the honey spilled all over the place. Same with the milk. It smashed on the floor, broke open, and milk went all over the place. And the parent of the kid who dropped the honey said, "You stupid kid." And the parent of the kid who dropped the milk said, "That was a stupid thing you did." And I always remember that was so clear, the difference in the way that event was treated, similar events, but also the effect with those different words would have. One was actually blaming the person, the stupid kid. The other one was blaming the act. Now, if you blame the person, I'm sure you've received that so many times, when you're a kid, when you're at work, in your relationship, "You stupid woman, you idiot husband," whatever it is, when it's personal, that creates so much problems and suffering. It means that kid grows up to feel it's a stupid person. And quite frankly, I've given other examples here. If you're told you are stupid enough times, you actually believe it and you become stupid. So if you think you've got a stupid husband, it's your fault because you've called him stupid so many times, he's just lived up to your expectations. He's just pleasing you. He's just, you know, proving that you were right. It's your problem. And it's actually, this is, psychologically, it's a very, very well-founded, that what people call you is what you become. So, we never actually criticize a person. We only criticize an act at most. But also, sometimes you can't really criticize the act. You know, just, this is what kids do. You shouldn't have given the kid the jar of honey to hold in the first place. You know, you should have done it yourself. Be careful. Don't be heedless. So, but a lot of times, we like to blame, and we blame the person. And of course, that blaming a person is actually where we get a lot of hatred from. Someone has upset us. Someone has caused us suffering. Number one, we blame the person. At the very least, blame the act. But also, don't blame at all. But sometimes the blame game in life, again, causes the anger and the hatred. Why do you blame a kid for dropping honey? That's what kids do. They haven't learned just how to control just, you know, their fingers and their hands. They're still growing up. So don't blame them when they make mistakes. Like, don't blame other people when they make the mistakes. Mistakes are part of life. And how many times have you received blame? Does it help at all? Sometimes all it does is just destroys our sense of self-worth. We get blamed so much in life that many people get depressed, even suicidal. Sometimes we think we're blamed for everything, everything which goes wrong in the world. Sometimes that people actually ring the meteorological office, the weather bureau, and blame them if it's raining today. Said, "Look, you should have known it was my wedding today. Why are you doing this?" They actually blame the weather office, especially if they try and predict the weather and they make a mistake. You cannot predict the weather. That's why that they will make mistakes. So don't blame other people for the suffering which happens in your life. This great thing about the First Noble Truth of Buddhism, say life is suffering. So if you're suffering, welcome to life. Stop blaming people. And anyway, if you want to blame anyone, it's your fault. You decide to get reborn. Because that's what we have in Buddhism. You can decide to get reborn, practice properly, not get reborn again. Or you decide to have another go. So it's your fault. No need to blame your mum or dad. And often we say we choose our parents. So if you've had bad experience in your childhood, don't blame your mum and dad. You chose them. If you have a bad marriage, that's obvious. It's your fault. You chose your partner in life. I tell people, look, why don't you do more research? If you're going out with a girl, just find out her ex-boyfriends and find out just, you know, how she runs. That's what you do when you buy a car. You know, you find out other people have got the same model of car and find out, you know, its faults, especially find out how expensive it is to run before you find a girlfriend. They're very expensive. Do your research, first of all, guys. Guys, sometimes, you know, certain types of car have, you know, well-known faults. So certain types of guys, you know, you should know those thoughts, you know, find out a few ex-girlfriends, especially if you had an ex-wife. Go and talk to her first of all, discuss it. You'll learn a lot. What was that other old joke? I told this in Singapore. You may know this old joke about, oh, the husband came back from work and just brought a colleague back with him and said, you know, oh, I've invited my friend back home for dinner. And his wife said, what, you never even told me. I've got nothing ready yet. My hair's a mess. I'm not really properly dressed. And we've got nothing to eat. Why do you do this? I said, oh, because he's thinking of getting married, and I thought I'd give him some understanding of what married life is like, first of all. But anyway, okay, married life is not all bad. You know, sometimes as a monk I'm very biased, but you know, that's my nature. Well, you can have some wonderful times together, you know, being married, but at least you know what you're getting in for. So don't blame your wife for being a woman. And don't blame your husband for being a man. This is what they're like. So anyway, what we do, we tend not to blame things. And when we don't blame things, again, we don't go to the next step of blaming, of putting all the problems of our life onto other people, especially groups of people who we think that it's maybe the LGBTI community are causing all the diseases in this world. Because we allow them, we're allowing sin, and that's where the world is. God is angry at us. When those sorts of blaming, you know, problems on other people is just crazy, unacceptable. That is the extreme form of blaming, whereby we think we're solving the problem by hating another person to the point of destroying them, killing them. And the blame game should be understood as totally against the purpose of what we're wanting to achieve. We want to try to achieve the solving the problems in a life, a happy, peaceful, prosperous world. And just hating and blaming other people for the faults in the world are not going to create any solution at all, but make things much worse. Because it's hating a person, not the thing itself. Not an act. And a lot of times, while we're blaming that act because we don't understand it, we have no appreciation of it, which is one of the reasons why the big problem with our modern world is the segregation into different racial, religious, and even ethnic communities. It's one of the reasons why I like migration. People think, okay, Ajahn Brahm, you're getting into a hot political issue. But you can see, because I went to a multicultural school when I grew up. I never realized, it was just as a kid you don't know, you just grow up and you go to school with your mates, and some of my mates were Polish, some were African, some was from Pakistan. I never realized at the time it's because it was a very poor neighborhood. And that's why many migrants were there. I never knew that at the time, because that's all I knew was my house. Only later on I realized it came from a poor home. But, you know, it was a happy home. And so I didn't mind, actually, who you played soccer with. As long as they were good, I didn't care if they were Muslim or Pakistani or Polish or whatever. If they were good, they were in my team. And that was such an important thing for me to understand. You became colorblind because you were all in one big mix as a young man. And I thought that was really important to also have non-segregations in schools. You may wonder why there is no Buddhist school in Western Australia. There's Islamic schools, there's Jewish schools, many types of Christian school. And I take responsibility for some of that, because when people wanted to create a Buddhist school here in Western Australia, I blocked it, said, no, I don't support this. And I was influential enough that they didn't go any further with it. And one of the reasons is because segregation of people when they're young, to me, doesn't seem to be moral. And also it does mean that people can go up to, say, a Jewish school, grow up with other Jewish kids, nothing against Judaism, but I don't love segregation at all. Grow up with other Jewish kids, go to high school, a Jewish high school, Carmel school, been teaching there many times. even go to a Jewish university, maybe over in Israel or whatever, marry a Jewish partner, and spend all their time just knowing one particular segment of the community. When we only know one segment of the community, when we don't understand others, that's so easy to misunderstand. And an act, we don't hate the act, we just hate the person, because we don't understand where the act came from. We don't understand exactly who they are, because we're segregated from such an early age. As a kid, you know, I was segregated by gender. You know, my high school was all male. Even the college I went to at university was all male in principle, although at night time it wasn't all male by no means at all. You know, there's even a photograph of me going around somewhere. I hope it never comes to light. It would be very embarrassing, of me and my friends and our girlfriends climbing into college at night time. There's one little low wall, the way we would always climb in at night, and someone took a photograph of us. Very incriminating when I was young. But anyway, I was a young man, okay. But the segregation gave you a lot of misunderstandings about the people on the other side of the fences of life which we build. It's one of the reasons why I hate segregation in any form. Even during our rains retreat here, when the monks are off in the monastery, the nuns are off in their monastery, and that we are monks aren't coming here, I try and get other people, not just other Buddhists, to come and give talks here. We've had Muslims giving talks here. We had the Archbishop giving a talk, or the Dean of the Cathedral. Any people coming here. And I do that on purpose, because I want people to basically listen to each other, hear each other. So stopping segregation in all forms stops a lot of misunderstandings. And also stopping segregation for disabled, integrating so that people are not stigmatized, no matter if it's a physical difference, a sexual difference, or whatever difference. That stigmatization is what happens as a cause of misunderstandings, which eventually leads to blaming and eventually to hatred. It's an interesting time of our world when we do travel around and we do meet each other, we do marry each other. And even recently when I was in Singapore, I was asked the question, can a Buddhist marry a Muslim? And of course, and I would actually encourage that. And as one of my disciples over in Singapore, I'm very proud of them, it was a Buddhist who married a Muslim, one of their children is Christian, another of them is Hindu, and I say you need to get another kid and make them a Jew, and then you'll have the full house, as they say, the complete deck. But they got 4 out of 5, you know, well done. And they can live happily together. Why not? I ask the question. Why not understand each other? And when they say, well, what should we do if we get married? This was actually, you know, my predecessor Ajahn Jacquaro gave this wonderful piece of advice when he had a Thai girl married to an Italian Catholic. And they asked, and they did a wedding ceremony for them, and then asked, what should we do, you know, for our religious life? And he gave this wonderful personal advice, a Catholic married to a Buddhist. He said, on Sundays, you both go to church together. On Saturdays, you both come to the temple together. It's important you come together. Reason was because you have to understand each other's faith. You're going to be living together as husband and wife. So you, the girl, has to the Thai Buddhist. You have to understand where your husband comes from, how he thinks. And you, sort of the Catholic, has to understand your wife, how she ticks as well. So you come to both and create a sense of understanding which will overcome the mistrust, which will overcome any blame, anger, and eventually any hatred. This is actually overcoming hatred through a bit of wisdom and information. And also that when you do go to see other people's way of thinking, it stops the idea of what I call like the other. I remember my poor old grandma, I loved her a lot, but she was a racist. It's just how she was brought up in those days. And I remember she'd taken me aside when I was about 14 or 15. There's no way I could criticize my grandma. You know, you can't sort of teach a grandma. And anyway, she was talking about the Pakistanis in England. And she said, and she looked at me and said, you know, honestly, this is what she said, you know, they're not the same as us. They eat cat food. They eat cat food. And that's what she said. And I thought, racist bigot, but you can't say that to your grandma. And it was just, you know, sometimes misinformation, not really making friend of a Pakistani and getting to know them, like I did at school, and going round to their house for dinner or something. That is actually how you get to know and how you break the boundaries of misinformation, which eventually cause the hatred to happen in society. So for goodness sake, members of the LGBTQI community, please get out there and make friends with others. Don't just go to your own nightclubs. Go to other people's as well. And other people go to the gay nightclubs. Okay, mix. So people go and see one another. There, as you all probably know, that Buddhism is at least one religion which has nothing at all to demean anybody of any race, any sexual orientation, any gender, or any sort of disability. We have, because I often get this question from traditional Buddhists, and some of these, you know, unfortunately, are the Indian Sri Lankan Buddhists are fine, the Chinese Buddhists are sometimes a little bit biased, because I'm saying this out of experience, because sometimes they come up to me and said, we're in big trouble. I said, what's happened? I said, our son has told us he's gay. What do you mean you're in big trouble? Celebrate it. And he said, and sometimes, I don't know where they got some of these teachings, I think it must be the ancient Chinese culture of Taoism. And I actually asked somebody, please can I get some research done how the gay, lesbians, transgenders were viewed in old Chinese culture, ancient Chinese culture, because I think maybe they may have been, their views may have been altered by my ancestors, the British, in India and other places. I know that happened in India, apparently, that the gay lesbian community were totally accepted in India. When it was a Buddhist, even when it was a Hindu country, it was only when the British Raj came in, you know, with their Christian values, that actually they made it illegal in India. And I think only recently, I think it was Lord Macaulay, he actually passed a law making it sort of illegal. But I think that law has now been obviously rescinded, you know, as a law imposed upon Indian culture by the Brits, basically because of Christianity. Please excuse me, this is old Christianity, not modern Christianity. And because of that, it was suppressed. But anyway, in China, there's, look, you're Buddhist for goodness sake. And as a leader of Buddhism, I can say with authority, welcome, welcome, welcome. The Buddha said that may all sentient beings be happy and well, no matter who you are, no matter what you are, no matter what you do. Doesn't matter where you're born. It's like a person's character is more like what they do. And it doesn't matter about gender orientation or whatever. It means just how kind you are, how good you are, how virtuous you are. And virtuous is not harming others. Harming others, helping others, being supportive of good causes in society, being generous, helping, being compassionate. That's what makes a good person. And the Buddha said nothing about, you know, how you do your sexual life, because sometimes I get criticized for my sexual orientation. Celibate. Which, in today's world, is more weird than anybody else. You have the LGBTQI, I think, has that got all the letters there? I want C in there as well. Celibates. Now I'm saying that because I've heard that. people say, you know, it's not normal to be celibate. If you're celibate, you're just going to be a paedophile, like the other group of celibate religious people, not monks, but the other part. And they said, it's not the case. So sometimes, because people say it's not normal, and I've been criticized for that, it's because then they have some empathy for people who their sexual orientation, people say, it's not normal. I can understand what you're talking about. This is who you are, this is your choice. This is, you know, how you live your life. So, when we can get to know one another, so when we can respect one another, which what comes from knowing one another, mutual respect. And then when from that respect, there comes understanding, empathy, and the end of all discrimination and the hatred which comes after we discriminate. It's getting to know one another. And once that hatred stops, as the Buddha said, hatred doesn't cease by hatred, it ceases by the opposite, and which is, the Buddha said, like love. But what does that mean? It doesn't mean you like people of another faith or another religion. It means you open the door of your heart to others. Embrace difference. Embrace things which you don't understand. Embrace even things you don't agree with yet. Like in an argument you can have in a pub with your friends. One of the things which I always wanted to find out was why a person thinks like that. Not just to disagree with them, say that is wrong, but actually why do you think like that? And this is actually respecting another person's opinion, even when it's really weird. I recently saw a nice article from Finland. People send me really good articles about changing some of the ways we deal with the difficult issues in this world. And this was dealing with people with schizophrenia, which is, you know, is a really big problem in all our world. And unfortunately, many schizophrenics end up in the institutions. It's a nasty place to be in. You know, many people, you know, in those institutions, and can't we do better than that? And this psychologists, psychiatrists over in Finland have seemed to be finding a very good way to deal with this. Hasn't been done before, and it really got to my attention because this is a Buddhist way of dealing with it, which actually was respecting the delusions of the schizophrenic. Respecting them. Not saying you're crazy, not saying that, you know, what you were seeing was somehow not real. It was respecting for that person, it was real for them. And they said that had a huge effect when a schizophrenic was really being listened to and being respected. And I think that that's so true of other problems in our world. How many times have you not been listened to? That your view is not respected? Because, oh, you're wrong. You're an idiot. It can't, that's not what happened. That's not what right. That causes the arguments, and from the arguments, sometimes the hatred and the violence which comes later on. But how about respecting people's differences? Because once there's a respect, there's a listening going on. And once there's a listening, there's an opportunity for change. You know that sometimes just being respected and being listened to, even if they don't agree with you, changes the whole attitude. I have to be on committees. I've got a committee meeting on Sunday. And one thing which I read, learned, tried to practice, is what anybody ever says, please respect one another. Respect a person's speech. And as long as people have been listened to and felt they've been listened to, and when you have a vote on it, it doesn't hurt so much if you get outvoted. You know you've been respected and listened to. Yeah, I'm not agreed to, the other people have a different opinion and they've outvoted me, fine. But if you have a discussion, you're not even listened to, your ideas and views aren't respected, then you go away feeling really, really diminished. And from that, you can get anger. and eventually hatred. People need to be listened to and respected, no matter where you're coming from. And this was a person who was listening to and respecting the delusions of schizophrenics. I thought that was so radical, because I thought, "Ah, you're wrong, you're crazy, you're mad." And he said that was actually a problem. It's much better to actually to listen. How are you feeling? What's going on? And when you respected a person's delusions, they actually softened and lessened, and they were able to deal with them in a much, much more non-defensive way. So, this is actually one way of dealing with some of the problems in our world, and especially so that we can overcome the hatreds which do exist in our society. I've been hated, and it feels really rotten, and you can't defend yourself. You defend yourself, and then people just say, "Yeah, you would say that, wouldn't you?" And having been hated, sometimes you doubt why you should hate anybody else. Yes, we can not hate the person, but look at some of the acts which happen in life, and instead of actually hating them, look, let's take something like paedophilia. And I hate that act. It's a gross thing, because you deal with people who have suffered and really get a lot of scars which sometimes don't heal at all throughout your whole life, if you're a victim of paedophilia. But if you hate the person who commits that paedophilia, there's no way forward, there is no solution. The act, yes. But the person, I always say, is always much bigger than the act. There's another part to the person. And this is part of the solution to these problems. Please don't hate people, even terrorists. As I sat here and said, there is no such thing as a terrorist. If you think there's a terrorist, then you have a problem without a solution, except locking the people away, even executing them. That's the only way to get rid of terrorists. But as a Buddhist, they'll come back again. You can't get rid of people that easy, reincarnation. But there is another solution. And that other solution, I've practiced in prisons. It works. Great results. Okay, repeat this story. One of my greatest praises which I ever received was when I got a call from a prison officer who asked me to go back to teach in his prison. He said, "Too busy." He said, "No, we need you to come and teach." So I'll send another monk. "No, we want you." And so, obvious next question, why me? And then he continued on by saying he'd been in the prison service most of his career. He was about to retire. And he told me, he said, "I've noticed something unique with you, with Ajahn Brahm. Every prisoner who comes to your classes, once released, never comes back to prison. I don't know what you're doing, but you're actually getting people out of the system. So once they leave, they get a good life. That's why I want you back." And that was one of those wonderful compliments which goes right to the heart. You've actually done something. But then afterwards I thought, what have I done? Why? Why, when they come to my class, and there's murderers, paedophiles, drug addicts, drug dealers, what have I done that when they come, they actually leave prison and never reoffend? And I realize it's more than likely that I never saw a prisoner in the jail. Never saw a paedophile, a thief, a murderer. I saw a person who'd murdered. I saw a person who'd abused kids. I saw a person who'd stolen, who'd raped. They weren't a rapist. When you get that idea, very Buddhist idea, in the head, then you could see there's more to them than the reason they were in jail. There's more to the schizophrenic than just the delusions. There's more to the terrorist than the act which they did, which caused so much pain and suffering in this world. There's more to them than that. In Buddhism we say everyone's got Buddha nature. everyone, the worst people, even, you may find this quite shocking, even Donald Trump has got Buddha nature. I'm getting a bit too serious, I was throwing a few funnies. He's not that bad a guy, just misunderstood. But anyway, that there's more to them than that. And that's what I was focusing on when I went into prisons. Right? You know, a lot of times people go into jail, the first thing they ask, what did you do? They're always interested. Now, whether you're talking with a murderer, it's really important to know if you're talking with a murderer or a rapist, what did you do? But you don't answer. I ask the question, what didn't you do? What other part of you can you show me? And once you focus on that other part, that's what they showed you back, that's what they saw themselves. And they realized they weren't a murderer. They were more than that. Once they could see the other part of them, that's what they can focus on and grow. So when they went, live that other part of their life. They never need to be stigmatized, which is what we do to a murderer. Don't stigmatize. You're a paraplegic. You're not a paraplegic. There's more to you than that. That's just a few of your limbs. It's your whole life. Stop stigmatizing disability. It's only a small portion of you. Look at Stephen Hawking. That part of him is huge. His disability, what you actually see in the wheelchair, is only part of him. So when you see the other part, that's actually where you see the solution to these problems. You don't hate people because there's only part of them which is hate-worthy, if you like. That some of their actions, the other part of them is beautiful. So if we want to sort of solve these problems of people who cause difficulty in this world, see the other part of them and love that. As someone once said, the only way to overcome a bad ideology, a theory of hate, a religion of superiority, is actually to put another idea forward, which is obviously better. You don't try and destroy a bad idea, you just present a better idea, which can supplant it. So that's why I don't think it's very helpful to argue against terrorist ideology. Instead, to present a much better ideology, which presents a much more hopeful, better, attractive world. Why is it that it's so easy to market extremist ideology? Why can't we market a more beautiful ideology? When I was young, the current ideology was the hippies. Flowers, not bombs. And I remember 1968 in Youngstown, Ohio. I went there the year afterwards. There was a classic picture of the National Guard were called out, anti-Vietnam War riots, and this young woman, a young hippie, took a flower and he put it in the barrel of one of the National Guard's M16 rifles. And that was iconic. The power of a flower was more powerful than the gun. Interesting, but it was an iconic photo, an alternative to violence. Or the other iconic photo, which you know from Tiananmen Square, of the young student with a couple of shopping bags standing in front of a tank and stopping the tank. And that was iconic. Another idea which was more powerful than the ideas of violence and force. So I like to suggest presenting other ideas, not violence against violence, terrorism against terrorism, but other ideas. Maybe take a longer road, maybe more time, many deaths on the way, but forgiveness would be wonderful. I gave a talk in Singapore just after 9/11, maybe a week, 2 weeks afterwards. And after the talk, the obvious question, if you were President Bush, what would you have done? And I said straight away, I did this, I said this with with all the power of being a monk for such a long time, after 9/11, if I was President Bush, I would have gone on TV straight away and said, I forgive everybody involved in this terrorist act. There's been enough people died already. I don't want any more mothers crying over their sons. I don't want any brothers just so lost because their little brother has gone. I forgive everybody. Let's end this violence. And I was wondering what would have happened afterwards, just imagining just people through the streets of Baghdad holding up photos of George W. Bush rather than Osama bin Laden. George Bush, George Bush, instead of Osama bin Laden. And I got a standing ovation for that, about 1,500 people. They thought it gave them hope. Hope for a different way of dealing with violence. Just what I was trained as a Buddhist. Hatred doesn't cease with more hatred. It ceases with this beautiful forgiveness. Open the door of your heart to the others, respecting other people's point of view. Not necessarily agreeing with it, but respecting it, listening to it. And then violence tends to diminish and vanish. You don't have to be the same as other people. You don't have to convert others. We can live side by side. I grew up side by side. I don't know how many different religions in my primary school. They were my friends. Didn't care what religion I went to, what mosque, what church, what temple they went to. If they played soccer, they were in my team. They're my mates. Can't we actually do that so there's no more hatred in this world? Or at least we can lessen it. And that way, that we can build a better world for ourselves. Not discrimination, not even having to understand another person, but respecting them, respecting the fact you may not understand where they come from, why they think like that. Can't get my head around that. It's just their upbringing, their conditioning. But underneath the faith which I have, the underlying faith which drives a talk like this, is the belief in every human being there's a Buddha nature. There's a good part to them. And I always want to look at that good part, see that good part, bring that good part out, encourage it, grow it. And then you take a terrorist and you bring them into a beautiful person. So, quick story, because I told this in my book, real story, terrorist insurgents in Thailand in the 1970s. They were all given amnesty, even though they killed soldiers and murdered and tortured monks in Ajahn Phan's monastery, if anyone knows that. In just outside of Sokonakon, some of his monks wandering into the mountains, captured by the communist insurgents, the two seniors tortured and killed in front of all the other monks as a warning. Soldiers killed. Did people in Thailand go after these insurgents? No. Non-violence, forgiveness, amnesty, and at the same time, what's the problem? Economic inequality. So they put heaps and heaps of money into the poor areas of Thailand. Irrigation, roads, medical clinics, the works, electricity, give prosperity. And then one by one, every one of those insurgents, the terrorists, gave themselves up. When the main ones gave themselves up, the leaders of the insurgencies, the Mullah Omars, the Osama bin Ladens of the insurgency in Thailand, gave themselves up. They weren't put in prison, they weren't interrogated, they weren't put against on a wall and shot. You know what happened to them? This is a brilliant story. They were immediately given very important jobs in the government civil service. You guys, you've been fighting the country for 4 or 5 years, you've done a really good job of it. But we want you inside the tent. Now use your ideas. You want to make Thailand a better place, come and work with us. And they did. And when I told that story once in Sydney, the Thai consul was there. He stood up and said, I want to add an ending to that story of how to deal with violence. He He said, two of those rebel leaders, two of them, he said, are currently serving as ministers in the Thai government, making the country a better place. That is how you deal with insurgency, how you deal with terrorism. Bring them inside the tent instead of pushing them outside. Radical. We need new ideas. Old ideas aren't working. And that is classic Buddhism. Okay, giving you something to think about, different angle on things. Thank you for listening. Now, any questions? Okay, see what we've got here from overseas. Okay, very good. The first question is from the Taliban. The next one is from Donald Trump. if only.
Excuse me, Bhante, can I just say, just before you start, someone with a metallic Corolla, 1DMN 281, you're blocking some other people trying to get away. If you could...
So what's that? Car 1...
Is that metallic Corolla?
Metallic Corolla?
Yeah, 1DMN 281.
DMM 211. You're making very bad karma.
281, yeah.
Please move quickly. Okay, good question from Boston. How do we overcome self-hatred and loathing? Being hypercritical, setting impossible standards, for example. Exactly the same way. I actually meant to talk about the way we hate others is a reflection of the way we hate ourselves. In some ideologies, we do self-hate, which is why we tend to hate other people. Other ideologies, we respect ourselves. So in exactly the same way, please respect your own ways of doing things. Listen to yourself. When you respect and listen to yourself, you tend to understand yourself. One of the things you understand is you make mistakes. Other people make mistakes. So don't allow your mistakes to steal your happiness. Your happiness is beyond being perfect. So don't hear hypocritical setting impossible standards, for example. The answer to that, same every other week when I'm here, the simile of the forest. From Boston, please go into a nice forest close to where you live and find a perfect tree. If you do find a perfect tree, you're not in a forest, you're in government plantation, controlled, ordered. In a real forest, you look at the trees there, and the most beautiful ones are the ones which are crooked, bent, brown leaves, damaged on the bark. They're the most beautiful trees in the forest, the crooked, damaged ones. Then you look at yourself, and you see that crooked, beautiful tree, and you look at yourself, you're crooked and damaged too, just like that tree. You belong, you're beautiful, just like the crooked, damaged tree. You change your attitude of what's beautiful and acceptable. Then you belong. When you understand that simile of the tree, self-loathing, hypercriticism vanish. Your damaged goods, the most beautiful trees in the forest, are damaged. Welcome. From UK, how can we go about making these changes in society, preventing hatred and sharing love? Lead by example, be vocal, be active. No, listen to this talk every Friday evening. A little bit of meditation, a little bit of positive reinforcement. So sometimes, it's interesting, the media is always negative, always saying what's wrong in the world. And I've been in places and people have called me up and say, are you all right, Ajahn Brahm? I hear there's a riot in the city where you're living. And I said, I haven't seen any riots. Because on the front page of the newspapers, in the TV, 6 o'clock news, they focus on that one street where there's a riot. And they say, riots in London. There's only riot in a tiny one street of this huge metropolis. And people get worried. I was in Penang when the tsunami hit. Ah! Ajahn Brahm, are you okay? One of the monks was desperately trying to find me in Penang, see if I was okay. He wasn't really concerned about my well-being, just the fact he was number two monk and would have to take over if I died. That's what really scared him. That's Chittamalo.
He admitted it afterwards. But look, it's a huge country. There are 6 or 7 people died. You know, no chance that I'd be one of those.
So a lot of times, the negative news we exaggerate in our minds and it becomes huge. Well, it's interesting to see how social media is changing the ball game of news. Opens opportunity of getting something more realistic and more kind and more soft happening. So I think one of the reasons is like social media overcoming the news media, where profit means negative news. Negative news means profit. Social media, there's no profit involved, so I think it may be a bit more accurate and less negative. That could change, I think, the ball game. I'd love to see what happens. But, lead by example, yes. You do need examples, you do need encouragement, you do need to be vocal, but be soft with your vocals. Don't shout, "Everyone must love each other!" Somebody said this recently, I should have shared it some time ago. They said that when you're in love, you speak softly to each other. Speaking of, "I love you, darling, you're so wonderful." When you're upset at each other, you shout at each other. Why is that? It's because when you're in love, you're close to one another, you don't need to shout. When you're angry, you're distant from each other. That's why you need to shout to be heard. It's a wonderful little metaphor. When we're close to each other, we don't need shouts. We don't need violence. In fact, we become distant from one another. That's why we're shouting. That's why we can't understand one another. But as we learn to be closer to each other, physically and emotionally and intellectually, then maybe we don't need to shout anymore. We don't need the bombs to prove a point. We can whisper. And anyway, from Perth, how can should we reconcile the deaths in Orlando? You can't reconcile anything. All we can do is learn from these things. Learn from our mistakes and don't just blame other people. So easy to say, oh, it's like homophobia, it's Islamic fundamentalism, it's too many guns in the United States, it's the media or whatever. Don't just blame others. Take responsibility for yourself. How can you make a more peaceful world? So easy to put the blame and therefore the onus on somebody else to fix the problem. How can we become kinder, more gentle? The way we use our words, where we go, mix up more. As I say, don't just go, if you're gay, don't just go to gay nightclubs. Go to other, take your partner to an ordinary nightclub. If you're ordinary, straight, go to a gay nightclub. Have a nice time. Whatever. Mix, for goodness sake. Maybe just invite the imams to come to the gay nightclub for a nice evening out. Or whatever. Try and find ways of actually breaking down the boundaries of suspicion and misunderstanding which caused this problem in the first place. And then I think once those boundaries are broken down, then you don't care. Gay, Muslim, you have them both in the same football team. You have the imam in the front scoring the goals. And the gays, I'm just European soccer, the gays sort of, you know, in the middle, centre-halves, I don't know. And Ajahn Brahm is a goalkeeper. I say Ajahn Brahm is a goalkeeper because I'm so big and fat. You know, it's very, very hard to get a ball past me. That's only just joking. Okay, anyway, that's some of the reflections. Please don't agree with everything because off the cuff and just hopefully that some of what I said can be of interest and can be of use. So thank you all for listening. So now we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then please we can all go our own way.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang abhivademi svakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sanghang namami.